Translation: Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the deliverer from evils. Purport given by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. It's quite a large purport, so do bear with us. The general mass of people, unless they are trained systematically for a higher standard of life in spiritual values, are no better than animals. And in this verse, they have particularly been put on the level of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Modern university education practically prepares one to acquire a doggish mentality with which to accept the service of a greater master. After finishing a so-called education, the so-called educated persons move like dogs from door to door with applications for some service, and mostly they are driven away, informed of no vacancy. As dogs are negligible animals and serve the master faithfully for bits of bread, a man serves a master faithfully without sufficient rewards. Persons who have no discrimination in the matter of foodstuff and who eat all sorts of rubbish are compared to hogs. Hogs are very much attached to eating stools. So stool is a kind of foodstuff for a particular type of animal. And even stones are eatables for a particular type of animal or bird. But the human being is not meant for eating everything and anything. He is meant to eat grains, vegetables, fruits, milk, sugar, etc. Animal food is not meant for the human being. For chewing solid food, the human being has a particular type of teeth meant for cutting fruits and vegetables. The human being is endowed with two canine teeth as a concession for persons who will eat animal food at any cost. It is known to everyone that one man's food is another man's poison. Human beings are expected to accept the remnants of food offered to Lord Sri Krishna, and the Lord accepts foodstuff from the categories of leaves, flowers, fruits, etc. Bhagavad Gita 9:26. As prescribed by Vedic scriptures, no animal food is offered to the Lord. Therefore, a human being is meant to eat a particular type of food. He should not imitate the animals to derive so-called vitamin values. Therefore, a person who has no discrimination in regard to eating is compared to a hog. The camel is a kind of animal that takes pleasure in eating thorns. A person who wants to enjoy family life, all the worldly life of so-called enjoyment, is compared to the camel. Materialistic life is full of thorns, and so one should live only by the prescribed method of Vedic regulations just to make the best use of a bad bargain. Life in the material world is maintained by sucking one's own blood. The central point of attraction for material enjoyment is sex life. To enjoy sex life is to suck one's own blood, and there is not much more to be explained in this connection. The camel also sucks its own blood while chewing thorny twigs. The thorns the camel eats cut the tongue of the camel, and so blood begins to flow within the camel's mouth. The thorns, mixed with fresh blood, creates a taste for the foolish camel, and so he enjoys the thorn-eating business with false pleasure. Similarly, the great business magnates, industrialists, who work very hard to earn money by different ways and questionable means, eat the thorny results of their actions mixed with their own blood. Therefore, the Bhagavatam has situated these diseased fellows along with the camels. The ass is an animal who is celebrated as the greatest fool, even amongst the animals. The ass works very hard and carries burdens of the maximum weight without making profit for itself. The ass is generally engaged by the washerman, whose social position is not very respectable. And the special qualification of the ass is that it is very much accustomed to being kicked by the opposite sex. When the ass begs for sexual intercourse, he is kicked by the fair sex, yet he still follows the female for such sexual pleasure. A henpecked man is compared, therefore, to the ass. The general mass of people work very hard, especially in the age of Kali. In this age, the human being is actually engaged in the work of an ass, carrying heavy burdens and driving tela and rickshaws. The so-called advancement of human civilization has engaged a human being in the work of an ass. The laborers in great factories and workshops are also engaged in such burdensome work. And after working hard during the day, the poor laborer has to be again kicked by the fair sex, not only for sex enjoyment, but also for so many household affairs. So Srimad Bhagavatam's categorization of the common man without any spiritual enlightenment into the society of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses is not at all an exaggeration. The leaders of such ignorant masses of people may feel very proud of being adored by such a number of dogs and hogs, but that is not very flattering. The Bhagavatam openly declares that although a person may be a great leader of such dogs and hogs disguised as men, if he has no taste for being enlightened in the science of Krishna, such a leader is also an animal and nothing more. He may be designated as a powerful, strong animal or a big animal, but in the estimation of Srimad Bhagavatam, he is never given a place in the category of man on account of his atheistic temperament. Or in other words, such godless leaders of dogs and hog-like men are bigger animals with the qualities of animals in greater proportion. It's quite a purport, isn't it? Om Jnana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Utapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Vaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhishcha Kripa Sindhu Bhyaye Bacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnanebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Savidvara Hostakare Samstuta Purusha Pashu Nayatka Napato Peto Jatu Nama Gadagrajaha. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels and asses, praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the deliverer from evils. So Hare Krishna, I'd like to seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas assembled here, the senior devotees as well, and of course all those who are watching online as well. And forgive me if I make any mistakes. Strive to do my service properly. So, at the start of this chapter, we can see that Sukadev Goswami is explaining to Parikshit Maharaj the sort of people, that actually the necessity of actually seeking God consciousness and seeking the presence of Krishna, even in our material life. And then Sukadev Goswami goes on to talk about the various sorts of people that come to God consciousness. And even those who worship demigods, there's still an opportunity for them to also go from that demigod worship to the level of Krishna consciousness. But then it looks like Sukadev Goswami is then going on to then talking about those people who are very, very unfortunate, who don't come to God consciousness. And I guess this verse is a very... a classic verse. I think Prabhupada mentions these analogies a lot in his lectures, how modern day man is compared to dog, hog, camel and ass. And we can see from these verses, especially this week, the classes that we've had, is actually really looking at what is the essence of our existence here. Is it simply for material enjoyment, or is it for something deeper? And actually, how does material enjoyment and prosperity measure up in relation to actually seeking Krishna consciousness? So I think it was on Tuesday, Taruna Krishna Prabhu obviously demonstrated the pastime of Sanatana Goswami and the touchstone, and showing that, the value of what is this gold and things like that in terms of seeking Krishna. Yesterday, of course, Sukadev Prabhu talked about the pastime between Narad Muni and Daksha, and how even though Narad Muni converted all of Daksha's sons into brahmacharis, for, you know, to practice Krishna consciousness, even if he got cursed for it, it didn't matter. Because what's more important is Krishna consciousness. That's more important than any material stability or instability. So that's the key message here that we're learning, that Krishna consciousness always takes precedence over any kind of material plans and things. And here, you can see that, you know, and Prabhupada compares these people, like these animals. In the Sri Ishopanishad, in the third mantra, Prabhupada also, well, not Prabhupada, the actual scripture itself, but Prabhupada goes on to say that such people are called Atmaha, right? Does anyone know what Atmaha means? Yes, killer of the soul. Now, obviously, we learned that in Bhagavad Gita that the soul cannot be killed, right? So what do we think this means, that the killer of the soul, like the soul cannot be killed, and yet they're described as killers of the soul? Any thoughts? Yes, Marahari Prabhu? Okay, so Prabhuji's saying that they're acting in a way that they can just take millions of births. The soul does take millions of births. Any more elucidation on that, Rasaraj Prabhu?
Because they're killing any chance to grow in spiritual life.
Yeah, thank you, Prabhu. And yeah, Govinda Prabhu, did you want to add on to that?
Also, some of them are killing animals.
Yeah, okay. So Govinda Prabhu is also saying they are also killing other beings, animals. So in one sense, I mean, that can be taken literally in the sense that they're killing other people in their other beings, in their journey, in their soul's progression. And in the process, they're also like damaging their own consciousness as well. But Rasaraj Prabhu, I appreciate what you also said there, that the soul's purpose is to actually go back to Godhead. So if you're actually denying the soul's purpose, then you're actually killing what is the soul's actual right. And especially as a human being, we have this opportunity. I think this is one of the few lives where we can actually go back to Godhead and seek God realization. So it's a massive waste of a life if we're not even actually attaining for God consciousness. And I like how Prabhupada actually describes the different types of people according to, animals. So here he mentions dogs. So he says that dogs nowadays, like, you know, people are like dogs. They just go from master to master. And even the masters don't treat them very well. And actually, you know, like, just drive them away. Don't really give them much sufficient rewards or anything like that. And it's interesting because modern society, it's so consumer-driven, so profit-based, that actually, in the olden days, in Vedic system, in Varnashram as well, there was a real relationship of love between, master-servant, right? We use the words master-servant, but it's not in the modern sense of like, you know, you're my slave, I'm going to do what I want with you. It was very much like about a care. When Bhishma Dev gives instructions to Yudhishthir, in the Bhagavatam, you know, he talks about how the leader will treat his followers like children. A leader knows his followers as good as a mother knows her own children, right? And that's actually what it's meant to be treating them. And the modern day leaders, actually, they have I listened to some lectures on Ramayana, and it's mentioned that the modern day leaders, they have a Ravana mentality. So I thought this interesting because here it's saying that, you know, they treat their employees like dogs. You know, if a person's not performing, even if in a company, a person may perform very well and work really hard, you know, for years and years. But let's say in the latest quarter or something, that person's performance goes down. It's not even like, sometimes depending on the discretion of the employer, they may consider the full measure of that person and think, okay, you know what, you've done well over the last few years, last few months, you've not been performing very well, we'll let you off. But sometimes employers won't even care. They say that, look, I appreciate what you've done in the past, but look, we're going to have to let you go, you know, and give them the slip, right? And so it's almost like there's no like sense of like care for that person going beyond just their performance review. So we see that it's a Ravana mentality because in the Ramayana, we know that when the battle took place, if you look at the comparison between Lord Ram and Ravana, Lord Ram was always on the ground level with his soldiers, you know, the monkey soldiers fighting, Ravana and his soldiers. Doesn't even know where Ravana was during that war. You know the Ramayana war. Anyone knows where Ravana was? Yeah, actually, for most of the war, Ravana was actually in his palace. He wasn't even coming out to lead from the front. And also, Lord Ram would actually take care of each and every one of his soldiers, all the way from Hanuman to the little squirrel. You know, we know about the little squirrel that helped in building the bridge. And Hanuman valued each and every one of them. Whereas Ravana, not only would he not come out, when he did eventually come out, because you know, after all his generals, like, you know, Indrajit and Kumbhakarna and, you know, all these different personalities, when they're dying off, he eventually came out. And even when he came out, he put himself on a chariot, which was always in the sky looking down. So that shows a lot of symbolism there, that he's actually, even with his own army, he's looking down like, I'm in an ivory tower. I'm not there to associate with you. I'm here to tell you what to do. It's almost like between a mentality between a leader and a boss. So he's a boss man, you know? He's a boss mentality, whereas Ram is like a leader. At the end of every day, Ram would be there, and he would actually help to construct the funeral pyres for all the dead soldiers, the dead Vanaras. And he would share in their sorrows, empathize with them, with all their pain that they're going through. Ravana, interestingly enough, do you know what he did with all these dead soldiers? Yeah, he threw them in the sea. So it's literally like a commodity, right? He threw them in the sea. I've had what I've had from you. Now I'm going to chuck in the sea. And there's a psychological tactic. He didn't want to show the other team, like the other side, how many people have died from my side. So, you know, just to kind of show them that we're not being affected by your attacks. So we can see that this mentality, if we're not careful, this mentality, well, I was going to say can creep into modern society. I think it probably already has crept into some level, you know. I mean, I know nowadays, you know, I know a lot of, companies also talk about, you know, fair trade and, you know, sort of equal, you know, rights and things like that. But I often feel maybe a lot of it's lip service. I don't feel that they're, you know, it's, because otherwise the symptoms in the world are not really like, don't seem to go with what they're saying. Because it's not like the level of exploitation has decreased that much. Probably increasing, actually. So I think there's a lot of lip service going on there. I'm sure Ravana did that as well back in the day. So the soldiers who are at the mercy of these Ravana-like bosses are like dogs, basically. They're getting used and abused, and they'll get chucked away. And, yeah, even with modern university education, as Prabhupada said, it's preparing them for this kind of mentality. It's not giving them the right values in life. Prabhupada then goes on to talk about hogs. I mean, this is a very explicit paragraph here where Prabhupada talks about, you know, they will eat anything, even stool. And Prabhupada goes on to say that, you know, the Lord will not accept any kind of food stuff. So we can see that when we lose our sense of discrimination, we'll do anything and eat anything. And even more and more as days goes by, behave like animals. Prabhupada then goes on to talk about camels. So camels, and he compares camels like business magnates who will get the thorny reactions of their questionable actions. So, you know, we know that Prabhupada said, isn't it, for every cow that's slaughtered, the person who's responsible for the slaughter of the cow has to take birth for every hair that is on that cow and then has to be killed every single time. That's that, and so imagine like these big business magnates who, you know, mass produce like, you know, sort of meat products and things. You know, it just like it's quite mind-boggling. Like, what's the extent of their reaction they're gonna get? You know, you have big fast food chains and things like that, and it's all for profit. You know, what to speak of? I mean, this business magnates doing bad things for profit is nothing new. This has been going on for like centuries. I mean, you know, if you look at the slave trade, they were actually like putting, you know, people on the ships and then transporting on the river. And if there's any sick slaves, chuck him off. Chuck him off into the ocean. Things like that. All for profit. And they actually used to use them as prophets. You know, they used to bring them into auctions and then, you know, measure them like animals, like measure them according to their physical values and things. So again, I mean, I imagine there must be severe reaction for such people, right? Who knows, maybe some of those slave traders will end up being born as slaves themselves in their next lives, you know? So again, very, very harsh reactions that one can get from this. And then Prabhupada goes on to talk about asses. So these are people henpecked for sex life, completely under the thumb. And you know, the more you're under the passions, you end up actually losing your sense of discrimination. We have examples of this even in the scriptures. Well, one example that comes to my mind is Dhruva Maharaj's father. I believe his name was Uttanapad, King Uttanapad, right? Yeah, like, I'm not saying his example is as harsh as this, but in the sense that he offended his son, who was obviously a devotee, at least a devotee in waiting, right? Because he wanted to keep his first wife happy, who he was very attached to, right? We have example of Sugriva. Again, remind example here. Sugriva went through so much pain and you know, had to have a long fight with his brother Vali to eventually get the kingdom, the Vanara kingdom, with Lord Ram's help. And then once he got it, you know, there was they had an agreement that once I get the kingdom, I'm going to help Lord Ram find Sita. And then what he did, as soon as he got reunited with his wife Tara and got reinstated, he just ended up enjoying and actually was incurring the wrath of Lord Ram. He was actually very lucky, because Lord Ram could have actually destroyed him or, you know, cursed him. But, you know, Lord Ram was patient enough to give him a chance to kind of snap out of his illusion and actually, you know, come back to what you're meant to be doing, your duty. Which is why, you know, like it talks about this, the asses who are working like this. You know, when it comes to like these kind of physical interactions and stuff, you know, obviously there's a reason why in Vaishnav culture they talk about distinction between gender. There is a culture of gendered etiquette and things like that. I know that obviously in modern society, sometimes I know there's a lot of debate, discussion going on about genders and things like that, and, you know, making it all the same and all that kind of stuff. But if we're going to go by the scripture, there is that, you know. I know obviously in Krishna consciousness, we are trying to obviously, in one sense, kind of like work with the modern mentalities, right? But at the same time, Prabhupada is quite emphatic as to, like, there's reasons why these gender distinctions are put in place. If you look at all the acharyas, because, you know, the mind, if it gets tricked, it can go in all sorts of places. We cannot be too careful. Even, actually, I remember when I, you know, when we, for anyone, I'm sure everyone who's, I know a lot of us are ex-brahmacharis here and are brahmacharis. When you come, we have the brahmachari talk. There's a few brahmachari talks we have. And one of them is how we interact, how Prabhus interact with Matajis. And it's very much about respect, but also keeping it professional. Not that you develop too much friendship with the Matajis in the Dham, because it, even if you think it's going to be platonic, it can lead to something more. You know, like we say, never ever trust the mind. Never trust your mind, no matter how sure you think. You know, you don't know where it's going to take you. Right, and in history we've seen such cases happening, to be honest. So that's why these distinctions are there. Even for grihasthas, there is still some strict rules in terms of how grihastha men and women actually interact as well. So yeah, it's there. It's there. The scriptures talk about it. We even have the example of Brahma himself when he created when he was creating the different beings, and one being that he created, like you could say, like a daughter, was Vak. You know, and she was very beautiful. And this is Brahma. His mind, his mental power is so much stronger than ours. And this is in third canto. He starts chasing after Vark because he gets bewildered by Vark, right? So this is like Brahma himself. Prabhupada does mention in the purport, though, we're not there to judge Brahma because he's like super elevated and powerful. And actually, that was a leela. Now, that's one thing, actually, because sometimes people think, how could Brahma be so bewildered as someone so powerful and intelligent? Actually, it was a leela created for Brahma to degrade himself to a grosser level of existence so he can continue with the creations. Because at his level, you know, he's initially, when he comes into the world, he's like mind, intelligence, ego. That's his body. He doesn't go any grosser than that. But for him to then create more, he needs to get more stuck into the material energy, you know, get his hands more dirty. For that, his consciousness needs to go one notch lower. So that was actually deliberately done so that he can actually go one notch lower to, like, continue with his job, basically. But the point is this, though. Never trust your mind, otherwise you'll end up becoming like an ass. And never take shelter of the material energy. That's one thing we've been learning over the years. Never, ever take shelter of the material energy. Srila Prabhupada said, never trust any future, no matter how, you know, wonderful it may seem. Right? Our business is to get out of here and go back to Godhead, which is why in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 5, verse 22, Krishna says to Arjun, Yehi samsparsa jabogha dukhayonaya evate adyantavanta konteya na teshu ramate buddha. So in other words, the intelligent people, they do not take part in the sources of pleasure because they know that they're going to end up causing misery. Our job in this material life is not actually to enjoy, materially speaking. Prabhupada said, and this is something that is really hits me, and I say this again and again actually, that there was a report even asked Prabhupada that, Swamiji, in your movement, like, where's the enjoyment? All your disciples just following principles, there's so many principles. And he's actually said, no, I'm actually teaching them how to really enjoy. So the enjoyment of hogs, dogs, asses is actually for them. It's not for us. We're meant for something much higher than that, right? There's different levels of rasa. There's partiva rasa, which is an essential level. Thousands and thousands of times more high than that is swargiya rasa. This is the rasa of emotions. It said actually, if your partiva rasa is compromised, if your sensual enjoyment is compromised, but you're getting a lot of emotional enjoyment, that can more than compensate for your sensual enjoyment. But even a thousand and thousand times higher than that is actually Brahman rasa, where you're enjoying the rasa of actually not being attached to the body. You know, you're on Brahman platform now, millions of times higher actually. And then even higher than that is Bhakti rasa, where you're actually having the enjoyment of a direct reciprocal relationship with Krishna. So if you look at most of the people in this world, Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki Jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanumanji ki Jai, Sri Sri Gaurinitai ki Jai. It's unfortunate because as human beings, we've got access to all the four rasas, but 99% probably of the world's population are probably engaged in the Bhartiva rasa, and maybe to some level the Swargiya rasa. So we're actually being misers by denying ourselves the opportunity to experience life on a much higher level. Okay? Now, obviously, saying all this, now the next, I guess the next question is, well, next issue that comes is this, is that most of us in Kali Yuga probably fit into these four types of animals, unfortunately. And the thing is, we come to Krishna consciousness, and it's not that we can just overnight change from being a, you know, hog, dog, camel, whatever, and just having a full-on devotee consciousness and devotee lifestyle. Some can, maybe, right? But a lot of us, it really is a kind of a gradual process. So I guess this is where we come to Krishna consciousness. Doggish mentality. Well, I mean, I guess, what are the symptoms of a dog? A dog works very hard, don't they? They tend to wander, unless they've got a master. They tend to wander around. Like, dogs tend to go in packs on their own. They go from place to place to place, right? I guess camels, they can be quite stubborn. They're known to be stubborn animals. Asses, also, very hardworking. Yeah? So I think when we come to Krishna consciousness, we may have dog-like characteristics. Some of us may be ass-like and whatever it is, and we're not going to be able to shift those tendencies straight away. So then, thank God that Krishna has given us a system called Varnashram, where we can actually engage these tendencies in Krishna's service. You work hard for Krishna, right? Camels are described as business magnates here. So yeah, you want to make lots of money and profit, then use it in Krishna's service. In fact, that's probably the best way to actually utilize the tendencies. In the world right now, actually every single person falls into some sort of psychophysical nature, which can correspond with a varna. The thing is, though, is that it's mixed, but we always tend to have a preponderance to a certain varna. So someone in them innately is more Brahminical, Kshatriya. Like, I'm looking at these, you know, if a Vaishya is not situated properly, they can end up becoming like camels who basically end up doing profit exploitation and then getting a lot of bad reactions for it, right? Or like if a Sudra is not dovetailed properly, then they can have a hoggish mentality where they have no discrimination and they just end up just like eating everything and doing anything, and, you know, because there's nothing to guide them. Yeah, if a Brahman is not guided properly, then they'll end up going to university because they have a tendency to want to study, but it's just like, you know, slaughterhouse education, and then afterward they just end up like a dog. Yeah, so that all that qualities that you could be doffed in the right way as a Brahman of Asia or whatever is actually being utilized in a completely wrong way here. So therefore, Varnashram is so important that we can actually dovetail people according to their natures and tendencies so they can utilize it properly. And it's important because all of us have got these innate natures. What we lack in the modern day is being situated properly. So you may have, for example, Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj said this in a lecture over 10 years ago, but I still remember it. He said that the medical profession, I think he was talking about America, is basically Vaishya dominated. So therefore it's profit based. So therefore it's not meant to be profit. Medical hospitals are not meant to be profit based. So therefore the whole thing is basically getting ruined. So one thing is that we've got innate tendencies. We're using it completely the wrong way. You've got a Vaishya maybe who's in the position of a leader who's meant to be a Kshatriya, but the Kshatriya is not there, so the Vaishya takes over, and all the policies in the country are based on economics, and that's the sign of the country's prosperity, even if the level of mental health issues is increasing, domestic issues increasing, families are breaking down, but you know what, if we're bringing in good revenue, then we're doing good, right? This is the kind of like the sort of symptoms of the times that is happening. In fact, it says that if within the four varnas, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, if Brahmanas have a purpose, they're meant to fight. Every single varna is meant to fight something. A Brahmana is meant to fight ignorance. And it's funny, because here you can see that these university-educated people are probably the most, like, let's say the closest that we have to Brahminical-type people, are probably the ones pervading ignorance the most, right? So if a Brahmana is not situated properly, they can end up actually completely descending into ignorance themselves, and then that will affect the rest of society. Kshatriyas are meant to fight infringement, right? That means protecting people's rights. But when a Kshatriya is not situated properly, they can actually end up, and if they're not listening to the qualified Brahmanas, they can end up doing the opposite and actually become brutal and cruel. When a Kshatriya is not situated, they end up going, it's almost like this like mirror reaction to what they're actually meant to be doing. Vaishyas are meant to be fighting insufficiency, right? That means helping to facilitate, giving facilities for Brahmins and Kshatriyas, obviously, right? When they're not situated properly, Vaishyas can descend in exploitation. So when we say that we're in a very Vaishya-dominated society or a Sudra-dominated society, we're not having a go at the Varnas themselves, but it's just that the Varnas are not directed properly, so they end up going this way, right? The other way around. And then finally, of course, you've got Sudras. Interesting. Sudras are meant to be fighting indolence, which is actually laziness. When a Sudra is situated properly, they can be the most hardworking out of all the Varnas and can really contribute to society. And they can really actually really are respected members of society. But when they're not situated properly, it's ironic. They themselves can become very sensual and lazy, you know? And we can see that society also, like, it will change its views on Sudras from valuing them to actually exploiting them. In this country, the working class used to be referred to as salt of the earth. And then recent times, they're often referred to as scum of the earth, right? You can see the mentality change, right? When the different varnas are not situated, they end up acting against each other, and it ends up fighting against each other. A lot of the revolutions that you've seen in the world, like communist revolution, this and that, is because, you know, the communists is basically the Sudras rising up against the Kshatriyas, right? They in Russia, they got rid of the Tsars, right? And then the proletariat, you know, the Marxist party came up and took over, right? Because it's revolting against each other. Yeah, similarly, like, you know, if you look at Britain, you can see actually even British history, the political situations that have happened and how There was one prime minister, female prime minister back in the day. She got rid of the trade unions, which is very much to protect the Sudras, right? And then she kind of like privatized everything. That's a classic Vaishya mentality, actually, there. Of course, it's debatable whether she's rightly situated or not in that, you know, because maybe she's just looking at profit. I don't know if she's looking at other things. Anyway, not that we're going to have to get into politics. But the point is that the Varnashram is there. Hogs, dogs, camels, asses can be reformed if we use it. Which is why Prabhupada actually says here, right at the... sorry, just give me one sec. He mentions... yeah, there you go. In the first, literally in the first couple of lines of the purport, Prabhupada said, the general mass of people, unless they are, this is very interesting, unless they are trained systematically for a higher standard of life and spiritual values, are no better than animals. What's the first purpose of ISKCON? To systematically propagate education to different strata of society and check the imbalance in values. Right? So what's the best systematic way in which we can impart education is obviously giving Krishna consciousness according to the people, according to the propensities, and therefore, Prabhupada then said, isn't it, that 50% of my work needs to be done, which is to implement Varnashram, because that's the best system through which to systematically provide this kind of education. So it's very, very important that we actually think about this so we can avoid this kind of situation happening more and more. And then from that, then the animal analogies can change. So we can go from hogs, dogs, camels and asses. It's interesting, in the Vaishnav culture, animals analogies are used a lot. So on the flip side, animals can be used in a positive way. It says that a Vaishnav can be like a swan. So you know, Prabhupada, I don't know if this is a like a symbolic thing or a literal thing, but you know they say that a swan can extract milk from like mixed in water, right? Can actually do that. Okay, wow. Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah.
All the swans in England, they're owned by Her Majesty the Queen.
Okay, interesting. Wow. There you go. Prabhuji, for those online, said that there's a certain type of swan that can actually extract milk from water, and all the swans in this country are owned by Her Majesty the Queen. There you go. So, well, actually, kings in the olden days were meant to be ruling over all the entities, right, and taking care of them. So that means the humans as well as the animals as well, you know. So, yeah, so we can become like hunter-like people. That means we can extract the spiritual from the material. In fact, it says that, you see, we can't avoid the material energy, right? But it says that if we connect the material energy to Krishna, then... that's perfect, right? Everything here is Brahman. In one sense, it is Krishna's energy. But you got Parabrahman, which is Krishna. He's supremely independent. So if we can connect the Brahman with the Parabrahman, then actually things can really work nicely. Another type of bird, actually, that it says that we should be like, is the Chataka bird. The Chataka bird only drinks water, which is rainwater, right? And the analogy behind this is that it only drinks pure water, not water that is contaminated with, you know, like in rivers and lakes and puddles and things like that. So again, just only going for the spiritual in life, not going for material at all. You know, that's another understanding that we extract the Krishna from the material energy that we're dealing with, and also when possible, we only go for Krishna, nothing else. Because at the end of the day, the main thing that we have to understand is never take shelter of the material energy. It will let you down. Never. So with all this in mind, though, at the same time, I'll finish off in this last point, that we're also very fortunate that despite living in this situation in Kali Yuga with these animal-like mentalities, you know, we know that in Bhagavatam it says, Prayanal Purusha Sabhya Kala Vasmin Yuge Janaha Manda Sumanda Matayo Manda Bhagya Upadrutaha. Right? That in this age of Kali, people are quarrelsome, lazy, short lived, less intelligent, and above all, misguided and above all always disturbed. And we're going to see this more and more. But at the same time, Kali Yuga is also very fortunate. There are yogis who have done austerities and just take birth in this Kali Yuga. Because in Bhagavatam as well it says, Kaler dosha nije rajan asti heka mangunaha kirtanadeva krishnasya mukta sangat param vrajet. That in this age of Kali, even though dosha rajan, even though it's an ocean of faults, still, we still have the ability, the capacity to access this Harinam Sankirtan. And this actually in one sense can like override everything, override all our hoggish mentalities and everything and take us to that platform. So at least that's something that we can be thankful of. So I'll finish here. Any questions, comments? I'll go with Antaranga Prabhu and then Adi Guru Prabhu.
Thank you for class, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Just on your first point about the relationship between the master and the servant, or you know, all the three classes, Brahmin, Vaishya, Kshatriya, Sudra, Prabhupada gave a brilliant example, which I just read, that in comparison with the brain, the feet is less important, but we don't mistreat our feet, we keep it very nicely. So all the parts of the body represent the four varnas, so the relationships are all nice and everyone's respected. Good point. A lot of points in your class, I can't go for all of them, but the last point was nice, that about the Chataka bird only drinks the rainwater. So I just read one verse that says, the devotee should cry for Krishna like the Chataka bird in the rainy season on the night that it doesn't rain, on the day that it doesn't rain.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you. Antaranga Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the class. I have one question. Prabhupada said, obviously, as you've been emphasizing, that his mission of establishing Varnashram is very important. And at the same time, we can see in ISKCON that, yes, we're emphasizing that everyone should have the service according to his predominant varna, but how can we observe the situation that when the needs comes, let's say those which have, let's say, Brahmanical qualities, they go on the field works. Those which don't have Brahmanical qualities, they do Brahmanical activities. So just like Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was emphasizing the Devi Varnashram. Maybe if you can speak about that how in ISKCON, same time we emphasize Varnashram, but simultaneously, when the need comes, you have to fill the gaps.
Sure. Prabhupada initially, when he came to America, he wasn't actually emphasizing Varnashram initially. His mood was just stick to the Nitya Dharma activities, chanting, reading, prasadam, studying, things like that. Then obviously what happened, a lot of devotees started to fall down. And then he realized that, you know what, I need to give them some material engagement according to their nature to keep them fixed in Krishna consciousness. Then he realized that Varnashram, I need to bring this system in. Varnashram is a material system. We use it to practice, to help us to connect to Krishna and use our propensities to connect to Krishna. But what we are practicing is Devi Varnashram. We're not practicing Varnashram to get more into our natures and, you know, increase good karma for ourselves. We're doing it as an offering to Krishna. So that means that sometimes we'll do what is needed for the movement. Generally, it says in our services, one should do like 60% of one's service should be in line with one's nature and what one is good at, which tends to be in your nature. Then another 20% should be what's like needed for the yatra, regardless of whether it's your nature or not. Another 20%, interestingly, you should do services that may be even against your nature, so you don't get too caught up in your service, and that service ends up taking precedence over your bhakti. Because sometimes, you know, your service, you know, like, okay, I'm a manager, this is who I am, or I'm a speaker, this is what I do. And that can actually end up becoming a source of ego, you know? So it can take you away from Krishna, actually, in one sense. So, yeah, that should serve as a reminder that we do what is needed for Krishna. I'm just giving these proportions. I think they can also fluctuate based on the middle one, needs of the yatra. But generally, that's how one should be situated. Obviously, you're talking about field work. Now, of course, for brahmacharis, for them, varna is is a consideration, but brahmacharis is more of a, even like, you know, like, you know, you're in ashram, so, you know, you're just like almost like an empty bottle. You just do what is needed, you know, in terms of ashram. But obviously, varnic considerations can be there as well. But, yeah, does that answer your question? Yeah. It is a big topic, yeah. Maybe one more question and then we'll... Yeah, Cyrus Prabhu.
Material life, we see people run around and look. Sometimes they look like they're properly situated in their varnas, you know, quite happy doing what they're doing. So my question is, can an ungodly person who, or someone who has got no God consciousness, can they be properly situated in their varna, in a varna, in that person's varna? Is that possible?
That's a difficult, very. That's a very complex question, actually.
I didn't mean to make it complicated.
No. I'll try and answer just basic points coming off my head. So people in this world, whether you're in Krishna consciousness or not, have a varna, right? Varna is just a natural construct, right? So you have a varna. The more you're situated in your varna and acting according to the varna, it's positive. But I would not say they're fully situated, because the varna also has to be guided by values for that varna. Right? So for example, let's say you're a Vaishya, you know you're a Vaishya and you become a multi-billionaire investor and everything like that. And that's good that you know your nature and you're working in nature and you're good at it. But that's not enough. Because with every varna comes responsibility. You need to then also, are you working according to the values of that varna? Are you also making sure that you're working in a spiritually conducive, ethical manner with the profit that you're making? Right? Because otherwise, even if you're situated in your varna activity-wise, if you're not working according to the quality, because remember, varna means guna and karma, you may be acting according to the karma, but if you're not actually working according to your developing the guna as well with it, you will get reaction. So even if you're situated work-wise, you still need to make sure that you're giving the values along with it. Yeah. Adi Guru Prabhu? True.
This is the simple answer. These guys, they may do financial whatever, relative to nice spiritual values.
Prabhuji is saying that, you know, we can talk about varnashram and, you know, it is a mature construct, but for us, especially in Krishna consciousness, unless it's connected to Krishna, then it's meaningless. Actually, you see, varna, you know, there are people who practice varnashram and not in Krishna consciousness. And they said that type of varnashram is pravritti. It's connecting you more with the mature world to increase your good karma. Our varnashram that we're following is nivritti. We're there to practice varnashram to help us disconnect from this world and connect back to Krishna. Otherwise, it's not like it's essential. If you get advanced devotees that can chant all day long, and, you know, like these high level, you know, like Gaur Krishnadas Babaji, for example, right, who can chant and literally be completely off the grid, off any social system. But that's because he's immersed in Krishna, which is where we want to be. Yeah.
Hello. I think you kind of mentioned it earlier in your class, but I think it's worth mentioning again in light of Cyrus Prabhu's question, which is, the answer is, let's say someone's propensities to lead, to be a kshatriya, to be a politician, but they're non-devotees or they lack knowledge. Therefore, inevitably, they're going to be pulled down by the what it takes really to run a country superficially in the modern age. So you have someone's a kshatriya who gets controlled by the Vaishyas, gets controlled by the corporations. So thus, like you gave that example earlier of a politician, where they come into politics perhaps with the best of intentions, because that's their natural inclination to do kshatriya type of work or to lead in some way. But ultimately, they're controlled by the whole... There's nothing much they can really do. They're controlled by the corporations. They're controlled by the economy of the country. They're actually quite useless. The real people, what has replaced kshatriyas are the vaishyas, and the brahmanas in the modern age are at the bottom. Like you said, it's all a bit of a kind of a khichdi. So the answer to Cyrus's question is, in the modern age, you cannot really follow your varna unless you've got proper knowledge. You can, but it won't last long, or it will be very mixed. It will be very mixed in terms of what you can achieve, I think.
Yeah. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you very much. We shall adjourn here. Granthraj Srimad Bhagatam ki.